Here's the question.
Hola, bitches. Good day to you and yours. All right. You can do and accomplish a lot of things in your life, but get swallowed by a whale just one time, and that's all anybody wants to talk about. That's what Venezuelan kayaker Adrian Samaskis, he discovered last year after being swallowed by and then spat out by a humpback whale. You might remember his story, but if not, you now know the entirety of it. He was kayaking. A whale swallowed him, he survived, and now that's the story that he's going to tell for the rest of his life. Now, he's unlikely to outdo that. I think we're safe in saying you're not really going to have a story that's more interesting than that. And then there's 53-year-old Carol Murray. Now, she's been telling the same story for 29 years. Sure, it's about the first time she went skydiving, but the thing that made it memorable for her was the fact that her parachute didn't open. And like the guy that was swallowed by a whale, she did survive. Now, unlike the guy that was swallowed by the whale, she got effed up, man. Yeah. They said she had a compound bone fracture. The bone didn't just break out of her skin. The bone had dug into the ground. But she survived, and she's been telling us a story for the last three decades. But look, she's alive with a story to tell. Now, sadly, the story I'm always asked to retell involves getting drunk on tequila, kidnapping a stranger, forgetting that I'd done it until the next morning when I found him hogtied in my closet with pepperoni between his toes. It's all true. I don't have a ton of memory about it, but that's the story that people want me to tell. Now, look, it's not like getting swallowed by a whale or falling towards the earth, but that's my story, and that's the one you're going to hear. But look, everybody, good or bad, there's a story about you that no matter who you meet and no matter how many times you've told it, your friends, your family, the coworkers, they want to hear it again. And that is what today's question is all about. Brought to you by our friends at Advanced Hair Restoration. Today, we'd like to know, what is the story you were always asked to retell?
To be a part of the Big Show, call 206-803-ROCK. Like the Men's Room on Facebook, follow us on X and Instagram at Men's Room Live. Send those emails to the Men's Room at KISW.com, and I watch the show live on YouTube at KISW Rock.
All the trolls, away we go. Welcome to the 21st Amendment season, episode number 4555. What a large and charged program we have for you today.
Oh, yeah.
Guaranteed future repeat, the exciting return of Who Sucks Less. Steve, I don't know how you do it. You find people doing messed up stuff in the news each and every week, which is amazing to me.
Tough to do, man.
You take those three stories and you ask us, out of the three, which one sucks the least? So is there a theme to today's Who Sucks Less?
Yeah, it's just effed up. I think that's the underlying theme here. Like, for example, if you were to say, I got herpes eating roast beef, I'd hope it's a euphemism. Not quite literally. So we have that story.
That is a messed up story.
It is. We have a guy who's really into sex, has had sex with a lot of people. The problem is he prefers them dead. And then we have a guy And then we have a guy who, as a general rule, don't throw a 3-year-old child into the crocodile pit of a zoo. And if you do, make it your own kid.
General rule.
General rule.
Was that done on purpose?
Yeah, and it wasn't his kid. I mean, not that it makes it better, but you're like, I'm sorry, you grabbed someone else's 3-year-old child.
Wow.
And threw them over the fence. The kid survived, just so you know. But yeah.
Who Sucks Less is coming up for you at 4:30. And today we're going to talk about things that have happened to you. Your friends know about it. Your family members know about it. But occasionally you get around someone who hasn't heard the story yet.
And everyone begs you to tell them.
Hey, you got to tell them about the time that this happened.
Uh-huh.
Whether you said it's good or bad. Sometimes it can be bad and end up decently, I guess. As they say, a late night beach walk in southern China turned into a week-long fight to stay alive for a tourist who had no phone, no flotation device, or food. The 39-year-old man, identified by multiple outlets as Quin Jiping, was walking along the shore May 27th when powerful waves pulled him out to sea. Now, the South China...
Well, he was on the beach. He wasn't walking in the water.
He was walking on the beach.
Okay.
China Daily notes that Quin had stumbled into the water after slipping on a fruit peel around 11 o'clock that
morning. Come on. Are you serious?
I am dead serious.
Even in the sand?
He stepped
on this like the third story? Of
yes.
This? You had the guy from Niagara Falls who slipped on an orange peel and died. Or somebody else slipped on a banana and they're suing. Somebody else slipped into mashed potatoes and they're suing someone and now a freaking fruit peel.
He said, I couldn't touch the bottom and huge waves kept pushing me further out. Every time I swam toward the shore, the waves then pulled me back. So he stripped off his shoes, pants, and other belongings to stay afloat. He eventually clambered onto first one, then another buoy, where he remained for days.
Jesus.
As fairies that could not see him passed by. Starving,
I don't see you,
and dehydrated, Quinn says he endured hallucinations and survived by eating roughly 80 small raw crabs he found on the buoys, catching them with his bare hands and popping them in his mouth. The crabs were only about the size of a little finger, he told the news agency. I grabbed two or three at a time, rinsed them in seawater, and tossed them straight into my mouth. Now, on the seventh day, two fishermen spotted Quinn and pulled him aboard. Doctors say he arrived with severe dehydration, festering sunburns, injuries from drinking urine and seawater, and an inflamed digestive system likely caused by the 80 crabs that he ate to save his life.
God.
He lost about 20 pounds during the ordeal. Now he's recuperating in a hospital.
In 2 days?
In stable condition. No, he was out there for a week.
A week.
On a buoy.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
He vowed to personally thank the fisherman he calls his two brothers. So that, he survived just clinging to that buoy for a week.
Look, man, that is an incredible story, but I feel like if I were him and someone said, oh, I want to hear the story. Like, no. Like, I do not want to revisit any of that.
No.
A week?
That's terrifying.
Jesus,
I can't believe
Christ.
He held on that long.
I don't either. I mean, like you said, you watch ferries go by. I feel like that's when you start giving up hope, which is there's boats going by, but no one can see me.
Right. Now, I've eaten a lot of different crab in my lifetime. I've never eaten it raw.
And they've all
I've
been
never
dead.
Seen it. It's not in a sushi restaurant.
So there's tiny little crabs,
mm-hmm.
and they come from somewhere in Asia, maybe China. And I know you can, like, cook them, and then you're supposed to eat them shell and all.
Okay. But again, they're cooked.
But even when they're cooked, I've seen people try them, and like, I don't know. So the fact he's eating them raw.
I mean, I guess, look, man, you're hanging onto a buoy. It's been a week. There's nothing to eat, and there's a bunch of crabs on the buoy with you. I can't imagine it, but I guess I would do it too, man.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't go insane if he was drinking the water.
That happens a
well,
lot.
Well, and he was drinking his own urine, which...
How did he pull that off?
That's exactly what I was trying to
do
think.
You
was
pee he, in
was
your
he,
hand?
Was he floating on his back and then aiming it up?
Do you do a handstand? I mean, like, how do you...
I don't, there's a lot of parts of the story that don't add up.
They don't.
And look, I know
he slipped. First of all, he slipped on a fruit peel.
That, right. Your day's already stupid.
Which tossed him into the ocean.
I'm with Thrill.
Maybe, like
maybe he had a little tipper, a little cocktail.
Well, it was 11 o'clock at night when he did this.
Right. That's why I'm saying, like,
so,
look,
I mean,
if somebody asked me...
The math adds up.
Yeah, I think he was hammered.
Now, he might
have
slipped...
I don't think...
Yeah.
On an orange peel in the sand...
Mm-hmm. Now, depending on...
It's on a beast. Yeah, well, you're not going to slip on an or a fruit peel.
Thank God he found the buoy, because you can't... If he were wearing shorts, it would have been very difficult to make a flotation device. But you can, you can, in fact, make a flotation device out of a pair of pants, which is one of those life-saving maneuvers you learn when you, you know, do a life-saving class.
But you don't expect to be out there for a week.
No.
That buys you like 20 minutes.
Exactly.
Man. Golly.
Now we head to rural Minnesota. A change of plans on an ATV ride likely saved a Minnesota woman's life. Two men riding off-road vehicles near the tiny town of Backus spotted a lone van in a remote clearing, then realized a person was lying in a muddy pool beside it. Bless you. At first, Adam Sandbeck and Mike Gravelin thought they'd found a body. Then the woman whispered,
"Help me."
Oh.
Authorities identified her as 68-year-old Catherine Wozner of Alexandria. She'd been missing for 3 days when she was found on June 6th. She was stuck in the mud for 3 days.
Ooh.
Sandbeck told a local TV station the only round part of her face was visible above the mud.
Jeez.
So think of being in like a float. You know, like a one of those floats.
Salt float, whatever.
Right. Basically, it's
just... Oh, like a deprivation tank.
That's why she went,
"Help me."
Just her face.
Just her face.
God. All right, real quick.
Yeah.
You're walking by a giant mud puddle full of mud. And it starts saying, "Help me."
I poop myself. There's no doubt about it, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I might have just ran.
I wonder how they got her out.
I'm kind of, look, I'd have been with Ted. I think we'd both run away. And about 30 seconds later, say, okay, let's double back and see what this is about. But there's no way I would just hear that and be like, let me run over.
Help me.
Yeah.
I'm out.
The men that's right. Now, why is the mud talking?
She said it was basically quicksand. The men pulled her out and called 911. She was taken to a hospital. Her condition has not been released. Investigators have not said how she ended up stranded in the remote area, but she told her rescuers that she was trying to free her vehicle from the mud, and that's when she got stuck herself.
What did they think happened? She stepped outside of her vehicle into the mud. That is what happened.
Yeah. Now, I have heard some pretty horrific ATV stories. Well, the ATV, those guys were on it. They were the ones who rescued her.
Yeah.
But I have heard a number of stories from back home that are just absolutely awful about some of the things that have happened to people on all-terrain vehicles.
Sure.
I mean, it's gotten a lot better now that they have cages around them. And
four wheels.
Yeah, and seat belts and all these different things, and people wear helmets and everything else. But, I mean, the early days of that were as rogue as not wearing a helmet when you're on a bicycle or a motorcycle.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, when people got hit by cars, crashed into trees, had the machine roll over them, all these things. And it's a form of tourism. So it seemed like almost a weekly occurrence that you would read these stories where there was, you know, and look, man, if someone breaks their back, it doesn't make the news.
Right.
It only makes the news when
you die.
When it's a fatality. Absolutely.
And for the most part, as an adult, unless you own a motorcycle or a scooter, like most people just don't use a throttle.
No.
So then you don't know what you're doing. You hop on one of those four-wheelers, like, it could happen quickly.
Well, I see it a lot of time in Mexico on the jet skis. Same thing. These people get so excited. It's such a good idea. And it's like, have you ever been on one in your life? Like, I know. How hard can it be? They don't die, but we watch. I won't say bad things happen, but a lot of preventable things happen out in the ocean. I'm like, you don't know what you're doing.
Well, typically, man. you're going to be a little bit better off if the guy who's renting it, takes you out for a ride.
But they don't.
You know,
that's the thing. The guy's just like, all right, here, give me your credit card. Off you go. You're right. There's, like, if you go skydiving, all right, I did a tandem jump, and you still have to sit through, like, an hour-long thing. And essentially, all I had to do was nothing, but you still have to listen. So I think with, like, the jet skis, ATVs, snowmobiles, like when people rent it, like, do you know how to operate this vehicle?
Well, your experience with a snowmobile, Ted, that almost, I will probably never get on one. I'm being dead serious.
So am I. I don't think I ever would again. What? It was beyond frightening, right? So to Miles's credit.
Had you ridden one before?
Never.
Okay, right.
So, and it's somebody we all knew back in the day.
I've wrecked one. That's why I'm telling you. Come on. Be careful.
We'll go snowmobiling. Now I'm thinking, wide open fields.
Yeah.
Ted being Mr. Winter Guy.
Snow.
Right. Wrong. We drove through Lake Chelan, and it's just like these paths through the woods in Chelan. But it is, I mean, you're out there. And then, you started getting a little more comfortable, and I took a corner that shot me off the sled, and then the sled literally landed upside down, kind of hanging off a cliff.
How far down did this cliff go, do you think?
Who knows?
Far enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Chelan, those mountains are
substantial. Huge.
Yeah,
so we fixed that, and then I'm scared, right? But some of these things that we'd already been down, you got to gun it just to get up them.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of putting around, right? I'm already scared to death. They're stopping at some lookout point. And again, I go to turn around, and I remember the bottom of that sled falling out. Thank God.
Over a cliff.
Right.
Jeez.
Thank God I throttled it. And it pulled me out of it. But, I mean, I like I told you, like, later that day I went to smoke a bowl of weed, and I couldn't light the lighter. My hands were still shaking.
Yeah.
I think it's the closest. Unfortunately, I have messed around too much, but that is probably the closest, I think. Like, as I had fallen off that cliff, and they weren't there. They were at a lookout point.
They wouldn't even have seen you.
You wouldn't have known.
Right. Wow.
Just would have been Ted Smith, frozen.
Damn.
Frozen Ted.
That's
you know what I mean? Right?
Frozen Ted.
Because you're up on, like, these roads, but in the wintertime, there's so much snow, they're just covered. So
yeah.
I don't know where that cliff led to.
Mm-hmm. Would you snowmobile again? We're in Kansas. It is just flat. Would you give it a go? There are no cliffs, right? It's flat as F. Might be a barbed wire fence that we can't see, but otherwise.
Maybe.
Really?
If it's flat, but I don't know, man. Yeah.
That spooked you enough, or even flat, you're like, F this. Correct. I don't need to.
Yeah. It seemed like a really fun thing, and then, I just didn't realize how dangerous it was.
Well, I was in 3 feet of snow when I crashed, and it was powdered snow. So the first 2 feet were maybe, you know, a little bit more compact, but the top foot that had just fallen, that was all powder.
Yeah.
That's kind of why we wanted to go out and take a ride that day. So, buddy's got a farm. He's got a brand new, I think it was like a Black Panther, not Black Panther, Arctic Cat, Black something, whatever.
Arctic Cat sounds more like a snowmobile thing than
Black Panther. Well, I don't associate them with cold weather sports, my brother.
They had a Panther something, right?
They did.
I can't remember what. Anyway, this thing is
a Jamaican bobsled team, and
this thing is brand new. I'm pretty sure, I swear to God, there's one color.
You can say the Black Panther.
I don't remember a lot of snow in Wakanda.
I know. That's one thing you didn't hear much about. Get the snowplow.
Yeah, let's see.
The winters are cold.
Old slut. Arctic cat panther.
Okay. Arctic cat.
But the one I was on was black. All right. So I think that's why I thought that. Anyway, so again, it's a farm, and it's Robbie's dad's new snowmobile. He's on his own. I'm driving his dad's. I think it's only been out in the snow 3 or 4 times at this point. We are flying through a field. Robbie's going straight. I decided to veer left. I don't know the property as well as he does, but the fence that was on the farm was basically completely buried in the snow. Now, I could kind of see the top of the posts.
All right.
But, you know.
Could you?
The horizontal slats, I could not see. But it was still powder. So, basically, the sled, the front of the snowmobile, the front end went under this fence. Now, it did not break through all the way. It partially stopped me, but it did not stop the inertia in my body. And I mean, I wish I could have seen it a little bit better because I did have a helmet on and it was snowing at the time. And so like the visibility wasn't great, but as I was flying through the air, it seemed like I was only, I don't know, a couple feet off of the surface.
Sure.
I don't know how high I was, but I was at least 30 feet from that sled when I landed in the snow. I was fine. I didn't break anything.
Except the snowmobile and the fence.
Oh, the snowmobile was completely totaled.
Yeah.
It was completely totaled.
That was the only thing that was good about when I flipped mine. I just put the windshield back on and the guy never noticed.
Nope.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's probably listening to that.
Were you able
like,
to roll
what?
Back over on your own? Yeah. Because this thing is now smoking. Because I basically took the engine and put it into the front of this fence. And I'm just looking at it. And Robbie just said the same thing over and over again. My dad's going to kill me. My dad's going to kill me. My dad's going to kill
so
me.
So his like, dad didn't know you were on.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, he did know. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, he knew. All right. He knew. But, I mean, he's just like, he's going to kill me. Because basically the idea being that I probably should have just stayed right behind him.
Sure.
That's his property. He knows a little bit better than I did. But, man.
I mean, but, you know, hindsight.
You want to talk about, like, I still remember his dad's face. Because, Robbie, I stayed there. He went and got his dad. They came out because we were going to try to see if we could get the sled started or not. But we couldn't pull it out to see how damaged it was. All I see is this damn thing smoking. So he comes out, pulls back, looks at the front of his sled. He's just shaking his head. And I'm like, man, I am so sorry. He's like, it's okay. It's an accident. As long as you're all right. As long as you're like, well, I'll get another snowmobile.
I'll beat my child, not you.
And I want to say it was like $3,000 or $4,000. And this was in the 80s. Like, this is not a cheap toy at that point in time at all. I mean, you could almost buy a really good used car for $4,000
for sure. Yeah, yeah.
In 1983.
He did the proper thing the adult should do.
Right.
But you know he hates you.
Oh, yeah.
He probably still hates you to this
day. Miles, it's okay, man. Look,
right.
It's just good jerk. I guarantee you when he got home, he's like, F that kid. I don't even want his ass in my house anymore.
Well, when spring came around, he also had to fix the fence again. Like, you know, put in all the
a gentle reminder of what was happening.
They had animals on the farm. That was why the fence was in. So they had to go and fix the hole before they could even let him out of, like, the barn area.
I think the most air I've ever caught, and it's probably not a ton, but as a kid, you just perceive things as bigger, but... We are at, it's like a 4th of July party or something like that. I'm only like 5 or 6 years old, all right? And there's a bunch of kids there I don't know. I do know a few. All I remember about this one girl, I'd never met her before. She had pigtails. And somehow out of maybe 18 kids there's one bike, all right? And at this point, I'm still a little wobbly on a bike. So the girl with the pigtails, she gets on the bike and offers me a ride, right? Big banana seats, right on the back. So we go to the top of this hill, and it was real rickety. I remember that. Getting to the top, and as we turn to now come down the hill, because like a kid, that's the big adrenaline rush you want, she starts pedaling, and she says, and keep in mind, the handlebars keep wiggling, and she says over her shoulder to me, I've never ridden a bike before.
Oh!
I mean, I'm just, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, my God. She's probably about my age. I don't know what she did, but we both fly off of this bike. Okay, we didn't crash into anything. We come off the bike as it's going down the hill, and I remember catching air and thinking, like, this is going to suck. Now, this is the really effed up part. I got lucky. She did not. So we're both in the air. She hits the street first. I land on top of her. And basically,
oh, man.
I like boogie board on her back down the rest of this hill. And her parents are out there. The other kids are there. I've never met her parents before. I remember exactly what they look like. Just the looks on their faces. And we came to a stop, man. And I mean, this girl's face was one half of us is kind of gone.
Jesus.
Like, oh, yeah. I mean, I literally landed on top of her. So in my mind, you know, like she's crying. They took her to the hospital. The party kind of comes to an end. Remember saying to my parents, I'm like, I got real lucky on that one. My dad's just like, shut up, man.
What is a story that you're always asked to retell? 206-803-ROCK.
Always live on the free Odyssey app. From the Pinkies Plumbing Studio, you're in the men's room. Text the guys at 206-803-ROCK.
Ted, based on your snowmobile story, got a text from a listener here. Said your nickname should be the Dead Smith.
That was a close one.
Yeah.
It was a fun weekend, but I would never do that again.
What is the story that you're always asked to retell? 206-803-ROCK.
I should also mention, when you get back at those trails, like we got, I don't know where we were up in like the mountains of Chelan.
Yeah.
So we like stopped and the idea was, I got to pee. I have never been colder than I was in my
back. Oh, really?
It was so cold in those mountains. And there's just snow everywhere. And they're like, just go. I'm like, I can't. I have an innie.
I just remember how, I just know how severe the drop-off is from Chelan on the east side of those mountains down into the Columbia River.
Yeah.
I mean, it is almost just a straight shot down.
Pretty much.
Because if you ever have driven up Chelan on the backside, like if you're going up, what is it, 97 or whatever it is, 17?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, after you go over Blewett, it's hairy for me to drive it because I have a fear of heights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even driving on that thing, there's a couple places around here I get freaked out, like the Astoria Bridge.
Uh-huh.
That's another one where I go, oh, man, I'm not comfortable with this at all.
What was the bridge in Maryland? That big long...
Chesapeake Bay Bridge?
Yeah.
That didn't bother me.
Really?
No.
Man.
For whatever reason.
I didn't... So it was super high, but it's just so long. Like, I want to get off of this bridge.
Yeah. What is the story that you're always asked to retell? 206-803-ROCK.
Like, I'll be honest with you, and I'll sound like the P. I hate driving over Stevens Pass.
I haven't done it in a long time.
Well, I don't know. Only in the winter.
Well, that's when you go. I mean, that's when you go to Leavenworth.
Nine times out of ten.
That's when you go skiing. I mean, unless you're going that way to go to Chelan. Typically, you don't.
I've done it just when you're coming back from, like, the Leavenworth side, right? You're coming back into the city. Like, I just feel like 90 has bigger guardrails. Like, it can be sunny out, and I'm just like, that's one of those times where it's like, I just hate being on this road right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
What is the story you're always asked to retell? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Johnny. Welcome to the men's room.
Jeez, you flatlanding city slickers are never borrowing my snowmobiles from me.
No, I'll never ride one again.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Ever. Now, last year, March 16th of last year, I did break my wrist on my snowmobile. So, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You just fix it and wait for next year. Anyways, the story is, when we was little kids, I was the youngest of all the kids. And my brother later in life would tell all the stupid stories that I did. Oh, John did this, John did that, So I just wait for him to get done. Well, we had these two big trees in our backyard, a big apple tree and a big cherry tree. And over the course of the years, we'd nail steps up it, and the steps would fall down. We'd nail steps up the other side. And so we're in the backyard, and we climb up the apple tree, and my brother knocked the last step off the top. Now, this is the first day of the new babysitter. So we're all like hanging like monkeys. We're gonna drop off the tree branches, and he decides to slide down the tree trunk. He gets about 2 feet from the bottom, and a nail hooks him right in the nards.
Oh!
And stops him. The new babysitter had to go out there, pluck him off the tree. We were just rolling on the ground, laughing like crazy. She had to pluck him off the tree and bring him to the hospital.
What was the sound like that came out of his mouth in that moment?
It's like he got kicked by a mule. It was awesome.
It was I guess the babysitter was old enough to drive. How old was your brother? Do you remember?
He was probably 10.
Right. Well, see, to me, that would be also as embarrassing to have a girl look at my wee-wee at that age.
So, I just let him tell his stories of the stupid things I did, and I just saved that one for last, and it's always the best. You guys have a great day.
Hey, thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Oh, and is that a story you ever look back on and laugh?
Yeah, that's
you know, I'm just thinking, like, a nail went into my junk, like, yeah, I'll tell you the story, but, like, I don't find it funny. I can't imagine it in the future. when I was 10, I almost ripped my testicles off on a nail.
I think the worst I ever did was just close it in a drawer one night.
Worst I did was zip it. That's when I stopped going commando. Just zip. Like, oh, my God. And then the worst part is you got to unzip it. So you're sitting there for a sec because you can't believe you've done it, you know. And you're like, oh. And the only thing you can do is unzip. And the unzip hurts more. And then I remember, put on underwear. I had to go to work that day. And you're lightly bleeding into your own underwear. It sucked. It's so stupid. And then when people are like, dude, what's wrong? Like, I zipped my D in my pants this morning. I'm like, what? I'm like, I zipped my D in my pants this morning. That's why I'm walking like this. It really
anything. It's a pain in the ass to get anything out of a zipper if it's gone.
Yes, including the skin.
Yeah. What is the story that you're always asked to retell? 206-803-ROCK.
How'd you get the beans over the freight?
Yeah. Oh, God.
That scene just resonates with me.
I bet.
Hello, John. Welcome to the men's room.
Hello. How's it going?
Hola.
Anyway, so back in the 90s, I published a magazine, and I got invited to Kamchatka, Russia. I don't know if you know where that's at, but it's like if you go to the end of the Aleutian Islands, about 100 miles further is Kamchatka. It's a peninsula of nothing but volcanoes. Anyway, I got invited over there to do travel stories because in the middle of the 90s when they're in the middle of a depression. And so I fly over there. That was an adventure just getting there. But I land, and I'm not sure if anybody's even going to meet me. And sure as heck, out of nowhere, this the most beautiful, blonde, blue-eyed woman I have ever seen comes out of the darkness and says, I'm here to take you. We get into the car. First of all, all the cars in Kamchatka at the time had the wheel on the right-hand side.
All right.
But they drove on the right-hand side. So I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and this woman is driving and pulling out to pass trucks. And I'm going, what? Because she can't see what's on the... But anyway, we get to... So I go, what? Okay, take me to a hotel. She takes me to her apartment, which is... At that time, everything was secure like a safe. She takes me there, and then she says she's got to leave me there because she's going to work because a ship came in, and she was customs at the dock. And she says, someone will come and show you around. So about an hour later, a guy shows up, and we get into his 4x4, and we head out. And I'm thinking he says, we go to the sauna. I'm thinking, okay, we're going down, you know, we're going a half mile to a sauna. No, he takes me out into the hinterlands, into nowhere, towards out of a place called Petropavlovsk-Kamchatsky, towards Yelezava, out onto these dirt roads, absolutely in the middle of nowhere, where you could see the Milky Way, et cetera. And we drive up to this compound, completely encircled, about a half acre encircled by barbed wire and patrolled by Dobies and Rottweilers, who are very interested in gobbling me up. But they grab them, they open the gate, they say, come with me. We go in. It's just this, it's like a little just cement block in the middle of the mud, in the middle of this place. I walk in and I almost fell into the cellar. There was a ladder down the cellar. He says, go down there. I go down there. There's planks across the mud. Go around the corner. There's a door sitting on cinder blocks covered with bottles of vodka and every kind of Russian food you could think of, including salmon roe, et cetera. And the sauna is around the corner. So we proceed, myself and this guy, we proceed to go to the sauna and start drinking and stuff. Knock on the door. Here comes the mayor of the city, shows up. We continue. Knock on the door. A freaking engineer, a head of the engineer of the gas pipe that's supposed to be going across the peninsula, he shows up. Then knock on the door. And this big blonde blue-eyed dude in a uniform shows up with this little dude. And he comes in, and the little guy takes his jacket, et cetera. And I'm going, well, who's this guy? He's head of FSB in this region. Okay. I go, oh, okay. So we continue, and we're sitting there, and I'm getting a bit buzzed, et cetera, and we're kind of laying there after the sauna, and the big guy's laying on a side couch, and I'm kind of sitting next to him, and he looks me in the eyes, and he says something, and I didn't understand it, but I go to my interpreter, I look at him, I go, what the heck did he just say? And he goes, he said, we are not so sure you are not CIA.
Oh,
oof.
I sat there and I looked at him. I looked him right in the eye. And I didn't know what I was going to say, but I said it pretty quick. I said, I'm not CIA, but I'm sure they're keeping an eye on me right now. And the guy looks at me, and there's a pregnant moment, and everybody just started laughing. And we just continued partying. But what ended up happening is I actually taught their kids English for about a month while I was there. And I ended up married to the woman that picked me up at the airport, and we just celebrated our 30th anniversary.
Wow,
are you kidding? Dang. How did you swing that? I mean, you land in Russia, you're in the middle of freaking nowhere, there's this one hot chick. How did you end up closing the deal?
Well, you know, it's a longer story. It's a little bit longer story, but I ended up going back, and we got married in Russia. And in the middle of like a 3-4 month deal, but that guy who took me down there,
yeah,
okay, when I came home, my wife calls me up and says, he's coming over and he needs to make a deal for chicken, for trading, cod, frozen cod from Russia for chicken, all right? I go, fine. He shows up. I start taking him around. He goes, I got to meet somebody. We go to this motel down just south of Renton. We go to this motel. We go in the room. He makes a call. The guy says, he gets a hold of the guy, and he says, yeah, I'll be there in a bit. The guy shows up at our door 5 minutes later. This guy comes in, he looks, I'm not kidding, he looks like freaking Sean Connery, okay? he comes in, it turns out this guy is the guy who got kicked out of Kamchatka for spying while I was there.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay? This is the same dude, okay? So after the whole thing and we get married in Russia, I got to try to get my wife over here, right? I've got everything planned, and I get a call. Middle of the night, I get a call from this dude, and he says, very powerful people feel that it would be better if you went and lived in Kamchatka rather than your wife coming here. And you know what I said to him?
I don't have any windows in my place. I ain't scared.
No. No, I said, you've met me. Do I look like Sean Connery to you? I said, no. And that was the end of that story. But anyway.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but it's a long story. How did it end up? It ended up great. I'm married to literally the most beautiful woman on earth, and I'm not kidding.
I believe you.
Yeah, man. I believe you, too.
I do.
What magazine did you work for that you got invited to Russia in the first place?
It was a tiny little magazine that I started in Anacortes, Washington, called Fidalgo Magazine.
All right. I thought
Fidalgo Island.
But it's a bigger story because her ex-husband ended up dying here in a car wreck. Okay. My best friend at the time was an old, quote, State Department, unquote, guy who managed to get her over here to see, because there's a tradition for them to see where he had died, right? I would normally do a story about that, but the local newspaper did the story the first week she got here, so I wasn't interested in it, but this guy was adamant, and I finally got an interpreter and went to his house, which is, by the way, 3 blocks away from the house I live in now, and but he's passed away some time ago. And I walk in the door, and I'm going to interview this person, and my wife walks down the stairs, and I swear to God, it was just like the rodent looking in the cobra's eyes, man. Her eyes are so blue. She's so freaking beautiful. And I thought, oh, God, this is it. I'm done. So I never looked at her again. I never looked at her again that whole interview because I had an interpreter. So I'd look at the interpreter, ask a question. He'd ask the question. She'd answer the question. I'd look at the interpreter and listen to him because I knew I was dead. I knew it was over. But at the end of the interview, I go to walk out, and I'm walking out, and Jack says, hey, we're going to the lake. And I say, yeah, but I'm working. And she comes up to me, and she knew almost no English at the time, and she taps me on the shoulder, and she goes, John, I want meet you again. And I and so let's put it this way. I went to the lake.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, completely understand, man. Yeah.
God damn, man. That would terrify me.
Yeah. Look, Russians aren't, they're just not the warm, fuzzy people, man. Yeah. I was in Hawaii. This is kind of like our version of our honeymoon. It was like 2008, 2009. And we're on the hotel property, but you know, on Maui, all the hotels back them to the beach anyway. So I go down to the beach. There's a bench. I'm going to smoke a cigarette. And one of the biggest people I have physically seen in my life comes strolling up. Like, it's like 85 degrees, not super humid, but it's hot. And he's got the full velour tracksuit on, all the gold chains. And do you mind if I sit here? And I'm like, oh, no, go ahead. So we're just talking. He was nice, but you could just tell, like, man, I'm not even going to tell an off-color joke. Like, this man, I can tell, will kill me in a heartbeat for any reason. I mean, like I said, he was very nice, but there's just nothing warm. Yeah. Not even, like, friendly, very chatty, decent conversation. I'm like, but you still seem mean somehow.
Man, I think that's just part of their culture, too.
It is. It is.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I know, like, you, like in Russia, like, you don't really smile at people and this and that. Like, I'm convinced if I went to Russia, I'd be killed quickly.
Why are you talking to people?
The Ted Smith.
Chatting, smiling. Like, I feel like people would just be generally annoyed with me. Like, what is he doing?
He is CIA. Is he smiles too much.
Yeah, right. Just something. Like, it just... nothing against Russians. I know Russian people, but I'm just like, I'm scared to go.
What is this guy's problem? He's smart. Right?
What
is he up to?
What is the story that you're always asked to retell? 206-803-ROCK.